You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Babylon 5 ended a great war and united 100 alien races in peace. Danger didn't die. It just went underground with new heroes and new evils to carry the torch.
We need to make sure they all understand we will not be intimidated.
What is wrong with you people?
We have to set him against himself.
It's an entire new season of Babylon 5 with all new episodes.
And so it begins.
There is a hole in your mind.
What do you want?
No one here is exactly what he appears.
Nothing's the same anymore.
Commander Sinclair is being reassigned.
Why don't you eliminate the entire non-homeworld?
I see a great hand reaching out of the sky.
Who are you?
President Clark has signed a decree today declaring
martial
law.
These orders have forced us to declare independence.
I saw people get off their encounter-suited butts and do something.
You are the one who watches.
To Zahadu, who will die.
Why are you here? Do you have anything worth living for?
Think of my beautiful city. Right?
Giants in the playground.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
We are here to place President Clark under arrest.
Turn around. Very, very slowly.
Hello, Mr. Garibaldi. Good to see you again. I was wondering how you were doing. You haven't written or called.
Shut up.
Obviously haven't improved your manners.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic, Babylon 5.
This week, we review the Babylon 5 TV movie, The Legend of the Rangers.
I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. The adventures of a crew of rangers who are called upon to escort a group of diplomats and end up in a conflict with a dangerous new enemy known as the Hand, conceived as a pilot for a spin-off, but the series was never picked up. Written by JMS and directed by Michael Vijar, the episode was released on the 3rd of January 1999 and takes place in March 2265. Guest stars, and there's quite a few. Dylan Neal as David Martell, Andreas Katsoulas as Citizen Jakar, Alex Zahara as Dulan, Miriam Sirois, as Sarah Cantrell, Dean Marshall as Malcolm Bridges, Warren Takeuchi as Kirato Sasaki, Jenny Rebecca Hogan as Nafil, Mackenzie Gray as Minister Kafta, David Storch as Tafik, Enid Ray Adams as Firel, Gus Lynch as Turk, Todd Sandomirsky as Tania, Andrew Cavadas as Captain Bart Gregg, Simon Egan as a Mimbari crew member, Bernard Cuffling as Sindel, Chris Robson as Ranger, Rob Morton as Drowsy Diplomat, and Eric Schreider as Cloaked Figure. Uncredited are Artine Tony Brown as Mimbari crew member, and Campbell Lane as Alien Captain. So guys, what did we think of this episode?
Well, up until you said that it was a failed pilot, I was thinking, you know what, this seems like a pilot, exactly like a pilot from the late 90s. You know, you've got your rugged, handsome, cavalier attitude captain in the vein of, let's say, Malcolm Reynolds from Firefly, or Jonathan LaPaglia from 7 Days, or any of those kind of late 90s, early 2000s. I'm tough and I'm good looking and I'm rugged and I throw the rules to the wind and I just do what I want kind of guys, kind of like that. And I could actually see this going somewhere as a series. Not a very good series to start off with, obviously, but it had some potential. and it should have been made, but it wasn't. So now we get to talk about the show that was.
Okay. I agree with all of that, Dan.
Yeah, you said about the rough and tumble captain, and he will tell you, as he did for the first 20 minutes of the movie, he took any chance he could to tell you his exposition, his backstory, what he thinks, how he feels, why he's doing his actions. He explains literally everything he does in the movie, rather than just letting his actions speak for themselves. So it's interesting you said about Malcolm Reynolds. We're literally 3 years away from Firefly becoming a show. And when I think to that pilot and how they introduce the characters in a very subtle way, they just have their actions and let the actions speak for themselves, whereas this pilot likes to tell you everything that has just happened in front of your very eyes, and that really annoyed me the whole way through this thing. However, there are lots of things to like in this movie, and we'll come to that in a moment when we go through all the scenes and everything. But you know, I will live and die for Turk. He was amazing. He lifts heavy things. That's all I'm happy with him. He's great. I would have loved to have seen a show with him. Mm. The doctor was kind of interesting. The guy whose truth was I dream and it's always someone else's face. Like, what a weirdo. I wouldn't want to be on a crew with him.
We had a talk.
He kind of reminded me of the Doctor from Babylon 5 as well. He gave me creepy vibes. I don't know what it was, but something about him was wrong. Andreas Katsoulis was in it, so that instantly elevates any scene that he was in 100 times better. And of course, they've got very long corridors and some very nice closets, so they're all on this.
Yes, and we got to talk about the girl who's the weapons expert, and she fires in that liminal space. And do we have to do we wait for that? Until we get there, because that was something.
That was something that was written on a script somewhere, and a writer was like, "Oh, that's going to look amazing." Yeah. And then they realized it's 1999, and they don't have the graphics capability to pull it off. Oh God!
But no. The faces she made, outstanding.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. So I think it was Malcolm Bridges, wasn't it? Special forces behind the scenes guy, you know, infiltrator.
Mm.
It didn't convince me at all.
No.
But anyway, so let's quickly get into the review and we'll see where we go. Six small fighters are being chased by a larger ship that is being crewed by Rangers, both human and Minbari. The Ranger ship has taken damage and its engines are only at 20% efficiency. As the lead ship comes round for another pass, David tells Captain Greg that the repair crews are doing everything they can, but Greg tells David to tell them to do more.
David, how many left?
Six. The lead ship's coming around for another pass.
We can't let them get away.
Repair teams are doing everything that they can.
Tell them to do more. We don't break off. Those are the rules. We follow and we never stop.
The Raider ships have been preying on the Alliance ships for months, and they have to send them a message. Just then, even more ships appear, and they crash into the Ranger ship. Greg is down, and the healers are called for. The engines are still at 20%, and the weapons are offline. Without weapons, they are doomed. So David gives the order to stand down and sends out the distress signal.
We are Rangers. We walk in the dark places no others will enter.
We do not break away from combat.
We stand on the bridge, and no one may pass.
We do not retreat, whatever the reason.
We live for the one. We die for the one.
Meanwhile, in an undisclosed location, Tafik is showing Jakar a replay of events recorded by one of their long-range patrol ships that was destroyed. It shows the attack by an unknown race. The Bane body have arranged to meet secretly with a group who may have information concerning this new race. As Jakar has travelled the stars more than anybody else, he is best placed to help the Minbari find out more about them. Meanwhile, in a Ranger dojo, David is joined by his shipmate Dulan. The council has taken 2 weeks, but has made its decision about David. Tania.
How long?
Sorry, what? Oh, 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
2 weeks. Tania, the Minbari character that was first seen in Season 5, Episode 5, Learning Curve, is given a demonstration of Andla's shock fighting. At the end of the fight, he calls for water, and it's David's duty to provide it. He's being punished for retreating in a battle which goes against the teachings of the Andla shock, and Tania tries to wind David up, but he remains calm despite his crew jumping to his defense. But eventually, Tania hits a raw nerve, and after a brief altercation, Tania ends up on his arse. David is out on the balcony when Sarah joins him. He explains that being a ranger was always his dream. He spots an old ship, the Leandra, and says he did not realize it was still flying. Sarah says that the previous crew died on that ship and no one knows why. It's been through hell and some people think it's cursed. So we know what ship David's going to get, don't we?
Foreshadowing!
Or just straight telling!
In the background, Shikar has been listening in on their conversation. In the Great Council chamber, David is about to receive his judgment. His friend Dulan has joined him, even though he does not have to be there, which David is grateful. He enters a statement to the council on his friend's behalf. He says if David is expelled, then Dulan, Sarah, and Malcolm will leave with him. It makes no difference to the decision of the council. As they are about to throw him out of the Andland shock, Shikar bursts in.
May I also speak?
You said I should consider any closed door open.
The situation has caught his interest, so he has decided to look into it.
As I understand it, this human is here today because he chose to preserve the lives of his crew instead of fighting an impossible battle and getting them all killed. A violation of Minbari tradition.
That is correct.
We live for the one, we die for the one. All that.
Yes.
Interesting that you place all your emphasis on the second half of that sentence.
Is it not just as honorable to live for the one?
Dying is not honorable. It only relieves you of an even greater obligation.
His actions have led other rangers into dissension.
Indeed. They put their lives and their careers at risk for his sake. I've met very few who can foster that kind of loyalty. One in particular comes to mind. Stubborn, difficult, fractious, annoying, independent, and willful.
And what happened to him?
He became the president of this alliance.
Of which the Andla shock is part. In fact, I just spoke with him a few moments ago. Would you all like to hear what we discussed? It may have some bearing on another topic we discussed earlier, Sindam.
The council will recess to hear this new information.
The council goes into recess and after much heated debate, decide to keep David in the Andla's shock. And he will be given a ship. And we all know which one that will be. The cursed ship. The Leandra. Whilst fixing some of the systems, Dulan starts to hear voices shouting. They are the voices of the previous crew.
Sold us out! Son of a bitch, sold us out!
Get us the hell out of here!
We're losing pressure on all decks! We're gonna die! There's no way out!
Dulan?
Hey, Dulan! I was calling you from the bridge when you didn't answer, I figured. You okay?
Yes, I'm fine.
Tania has been given command of the Valen, the latest and most advanced ship of the Minbari fleet. He visits David, who's going through a kata in the dojo, and tells him that he has been allowed to take one escort ship with him on his first mission. He has asked that the escort ship be the Leandra. David asks if Tania is rubbing his nose in the fact that Tania has the better ship. But Tania says he is not that small that he would take pleasure in David's situation.
Stop right there. Did the Valen not look like a rejected Klingon cargo ship?
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Somewhere between Romulan and Klingons. Yeah, absolutely.
It didn't look very advanced. It looked square.
Yes, it did. But they say that, you know, you can make it look like a brick. It doesn't have to be aerodynamic in space.
True enough.
He says to have the ship ready in 3 days or he will find somebody else to escort him. Dulan is concerned about David's choice of crew. It contains a Drazi and a Narn. David says that there is not enough diversity on the ships, as it has mostly been human or Mimbari that crew them. Wow, diversity. We've been talking about diversity in 1999. That's pretty good.
GMS was ahead of his time.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
David joins his crew on the bridge. Tania gives the naming of the names, an official ceremony in which each crew member introduces themselves whilst holding a solid metal gold star made of wood surrounded by a circle of the same material.
This star reminds us that we are born of the stars. We live in starlight. We die in starlight. We come from the stars in life, and we return to the stars in death. When we are done, the star shall be placed in the heart of the ship, where it shall remain for as long as we do. Your name, your place, your truth.
Sarah Cantrell of Mars.
Weapons and tactical combat specialist. I live to serve. I serve to live.
Tafik of Mimbar.
Political and first contact specialist. I come to the stars by a difficult road.
Kitaro Sasaki of Earth.
Navigations, communications, and translation specialist. I'm just really glad to be here, sir.
Varel of Mimbar.
Healer. My heart speaks quietly and infrequently.
Malcolm Bridges of Beta Colony.
Infiltration and covert operations specialist. In dreams, I never see my face.
Nafil of Narn.
Engines, environment, and weapons support. I understand nobody else would have me.
Turk. Drazi.
I carry very large things. Turk. Drazi.
Dulan of Mimbar.
Shaknali, first officer. My life for the Shakna.
And David Martell.
No place in particular.
Shakna. Captain.
I'm looking for something.
30 minutes in, and we finally have a crew, a ship, and a mission. Now, can we get on with it, please? As they are preparing the ship, Sarah informs David that the engines won't work. Nafil is on top of it, though. Cursing and swearing like a true Narn, she says she will have the ship's engines running very soon, which is what David tells Tania moments later when he asks David if they are ready to leave. He doesn't want to look like a fool in front of Tania, so he says that they're all ready to go. When Tania's image disappears from the screen, David hangs his head in shame. Sarah turns to him and says, "Today is a good day to die." Now, where have you heard that before?
Is that our first Star Trek reference?
Yeah, it could be.
Mm.
The Valen takes off, and David gives the order, "Hit it." After
There's our second Star Trek reference.
Exactly. After launch, groaning and straining, the ship, rather wobbly, takes to the air and is ready to jump, and they follow the Valen through the jump gate, escorting some diplomats to a conference. But they are being followed. At this point, more of the plot is revealed.
Something I don't understand. Why come all this way for a meeting? I mean, everybody was already assembled back on Mimbar. Why not have the meeting there?
Maybe they wanted the diplomats to see something they couldn't transport. Beta Drani 7 is a domed colony, roughly 600 people. It's an archaeological dig.
What does a security meeting have to do with an archaeological dig?
I don't know. But I guess we'll find out. Prepare to jump.
And they jump again to pad out the story. Suddenly, there's an energy spike forming right behind them, and the convoy is attacked. Sarah jumps into some sort of hollow suite and is floating in the air in the middle of the room. She gets an outside view of the attackers. She pumps her fists, throwing punches to fire the weapons at their attackers. But she misses the ship, which then fires at the colony on the planet and destroys it. The Leandra positions itself between the Valen and the attackers, and Sarah manages to destroy one of their ships. However, she doesn't see the two ships behind her, and the Leandra is hit. The two attackers then retreat, but Dilan has been severely injured. The Valen has also been hit and is crippled. He has ordered the diplomats to get into the escape pods. Tania sees that his ship is crippled, but has enough power to ram his ship into the attacking ship. He lives for the one, he dies for the one. So that whole attack sequence, Sean, you're saying it was a little bizarre, to say the least.
A little bit. Here, let's take this hot girl, and we'll put her, and she can do some weird faces and do some high ahs and some punching and some kicking, and it'll be fun. And she's a good looking girl, so why not? You know, the generic hot girl from the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, that's right. And she's obviously not being, you know, suspended from the waist by some sort of rope.
No. She was in an anti-grav.
Yes.
Yeah.
This gives the Leandra a clear run to pick up the escape pods containing the diplomats. The engines are down and only have enough power for half speed. The diplomats are rescued, but of course they're not happy as they don't have any first-class accommodation, only hallways and closets. David visits Dulan in sickbay. He has a concussion and injured half a dozen internal organs and internal bleeding.
I had a dream about the last crew of the Leanne. They were fighting to get home, lost, alone. They are not at peace here, David. Something here is disturbing them.
They're probably worried about you joining them. Hell, if I found out you were moving into my place, I'd be pissed too. But we're going to disappoint them because you're going to be just fine. Anyway, I should get back to
the... No. You don't understand. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's disturbed them. All I know is... something is wrong.
Dulan has a vision of one of the old crew members as he says he couldn't get out to where the air was and he couldn't see his face. The man then walks out through the door without opening it. Shikar is trying to placate the diplomats who are still worried about how they are going to be found. Minister Kafta says,
I am sure there must be a planet with a breathable atmosphere somewhere in this sector. He could land, drop us off, and get help.
Minister Kafta, this ship is being held together by little pieces of wire and good intentions. If we land in this condition, assuming we do not have an unpleasant encounter with the ground on the way down, I doubt very much they could take off again. They would be trapped with us, and the ship looking for them would find it, find them, find us, find you. A brilliant cascade of cause and effect. Isn't the universe an amazing place? I wouldn't live anywhere else.
Shikar is then summoned to the bridge, and he says his farewells to the diplomats.
Citizen Jakar, Captain Martell would like to speak with you.
Of course. Love to stay. Can't have to go. Kiss, kiss, love, love, bye.
That made me laugh out loud.
And that is probably the best Jakar moment of any Babylon 5 that I have ever seen. Absolutely hilarious. And from now on, I am going to use that. Of course, love to stay. Have to go. Kiss, kiss, love, love, bye.
Did you notice Jakar's makeup was kind of messed up? It didn't look right? Or was it just me?
I didn't really notice, to be honest.
No. It's like they threw out the molds after the series was over, and they're like, oh, crap, we got to put him in the show, and let's redo it here. And
the back ridges on the back of the head just seemed a little bit bumpier, like they were like something was stapled off. Together kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't notice that.
Okay.
Your name is Turk, isn't it? That isn't a Drazi name.
My mother created it. She says it means, don't touch me, I'm not having another child after this, ever.
That is a great deal of meaning to put into such a short name. They must be very, very proud of you.
David wants Jakar's help as an ex-military tactician. He says he has been reviewing the way the enemy attacked and something has been bothering him. When they appeared, they targeted the Valen's engines first, then blew up the colony, then destroyed the Leandra's weapons. Then they hesitated. Jakar says that you would normally hit the bigger ship first by taking the weapons array and only go after the engines as a last resort, as they are heavily shielded. It looks like they were trying to cripple the Valen instead of trying to destroy it. Jakar says that the attackers may have been trying to capture the crew alive to find out how much they know about them. David asks why Jakar is really on board, and he says they had found some information about an alien race in an archaeological dig at the colony. Jakar has a recording from the dig. They found a city 8 miles beneath the surface.
A city billions of years old, older than anything found before. Quiet. According to the hieroglyphs, this city was built by an ancient race that drove off the forces of darkness 1 billion years ago. They indicate that the enemy was driven from normal space into a place of eternal darkness.
Parallel dimension.
It's possible. The translators were still working on the rest of it. At first, they weren't sure how much to believe.
Then they found this.
What the hell is that?
A door to another place, another space. We sent a probe through that door. It came back, changed, distorted beyond recognition. The hieroglyphs warned of a time when the enemy might return.
Jigar has reason to believe there is a connection between this and the ships that attacked them. As he leaves, he bumps into himself coming out from the area the diplomats are being held. It turns out it is Malcolm in a holosuit trying to calm down the diplomats as they were becoming very restless and talking about using escape pods to leave the ship. He switches off the suit and makes a hasty retreat. More foreshadowing, maybe.
Could be.
The weapons are up to 20% capacity. They always seem to be at 20% capacity. They're never at full capacity. And they have company. But they haven't been spotted yet as their energy signature is too low. Due to the situation, they decide to hide in the tail of a comet. This gives them a bumpy ride, and a piece of rock hits the ship, puncturing the hull. This pads out more of the episode, and they have to move outside of the comet tail while they fix the ship. But they haven't been spotted by the other ship yet. However, more serious than that, Dulan has gone missing. He is searching for the original crew, as he can still hear their voices. Being a slight telepath, he is more sensitive than others when it comes to spiritual matters. He is found clutching a weapon in a delirious state. He says the voices are in his head, but David says that his bloodstream is becoming toxic the longer he stays out of sickbay, and the voices are not real. Dulan says that someone sold them out, betrayed them. Now they feel the same thing is happening again. David says that all the previous records have been erased, but the voices in Dulan's head use Dulan to reveal a location in the computer's memory where the records have been hidden. And a code word to release them is Entilzar. It's a bit obvious. It's like saying password, isn't it? I mean, it's just... I wonder what it could be. What's his favourite thing? Meanwhile, on the bridge, everything is still down, including the captain. He asks the ship to search for the encrypted files, and when it asks for a password, he uses Entilzar. It works, and a holographic recording begins to play.
Not much time left. Locked in as soon as the first attack hit. I'm running out of air. I don't know who sold us out. I didn't see his face. Avenge us.
Whoever survived is the one who killed them.
We cannot rest until we are avenged. Whoever survives us is the one who killed us. We never gave up. We live for the one.
So there is a traitor on board, but who can it be? No one who was on the original crew is on this one. Maybe it was a mole. Someone in the escape pods could have sent out a signal to let the enemy ships know their location, which is why the Valen was not destroyed. That mole could now be on the Leandra. But who is it? In the next scene, we see the Drazi, don't touch me, I'm not having another child with you ever, who bumps into Minister Kafta in Cargo Bay 4, a place he should not be in. Ah, so that's who it is then. Turk points out that he should not be here, as he could be injured, so Kafta goes to leave, and then turns and shoots Turk in the shoulder. He then puts a signaling device in the circuits of the cargo bay and makes a hasty exit. On the bridge, Malcolm has spotted the signal coming from the cargo bay. David, Malcolm and Sarah rush to the bay, and David sees Kafta running from the location. He gives chase while Sarah and Malcolm go to find the signaling device. David finds Kafta and tackles him, just as he is about to get into an escape pod. Sarah and Malcolm find Turk, and he tells them about Kafta. So Sarah goes to find them while Malcolm takes care of the device. By the time they get there, David has overpowered the traitor, and he has taken him to the brig until he wakes up. Turk is on his way to sickbay, but unfortunately the device is still sending out its signal before Malcolm could disconnect it. And now they have company again. One ship is just out of weapons range, but there must be another not far behind. The Leandra's weapons are now up to 30%, woohoo, and the engines are at 80%. It will have to do. Well, it's better than they've had all through the episode. It will still take 2 to 3 hours to get to the jump gate. They will have to run. The enemy shoots, but the distance is too great to have any effect. So they send out mines. It takes all of Sarah's athletic abilities and rage to destroy the mines, but she manages it. They send out countermeasures, but it only delays the inevitable. David has an idea. He orders the signaling device to be put into an escape pod along with a remote-controlled detonation cap. The idea is that the enemy will think it's Kafta and pick it up, and then they will detonate the pod. And this is indeed what happens. The ship is destroyed. But the Leandra's weapons have also been destroyed. They are now defenseless, with one more enemy ship still out there. David goes to see Kafta and asks how he can defeat the other ship.
Okay, here's the deal. There's one more enemy ship out there. Tell me who they are and how to beat them. And maybe you'll walk out of this room in one piece.
How to beat them? Beat them. You really don't have the slightest idea of what you're up against, do you?
What I know is that your people only recently joined the Alliance. That you're on the fringe of Alliance territory and none of your ships have been bothered. I'm thinking maybe you made a deal. And as part of that deal, you joined up to spy on us for the other side. What do you think?
I think that I have absolutely nothing to say to you.
Let's try this again.
Let's try this again. Who are they? What do they want? It won't do you any good. I'm not going to say it again. If you don't give me what I want,
there's no reason to keep you alive now, is there?
Rangers don't murder in cold blood.
Yeah, well, lately I've been having disciplinary problems.
We live for the one. We die for the one. If I go, you go! Enough!
Kafta relents.
Enough.
What are we dealing with, and who are they?
They do not have a name, as you understand the concept. They are called the Hand.
The Hand of God. The Hand of Death.
The Hand that reaches forth and blots out whole suns. They have left 1,000 worlds in their wake. Blackened cinders that were once thriving planets. For millions of years, they have been outcast, hungrily staring out across the darkness between the stars, searching for a way back. And now they have found it.
Are the ships the Hand?
The ships that are after us, are they the Hand?
Those? Those are only toys given to those races who serve the Hand. As I serve the Hand. Together, we will prepare the way for their return.
And part of preparing the way involves selling out the Alliance, is that it? Because we could oppose them?
Compared to the Hand, the Shadows were nothing more than insects.
If you had seen what I had seen, you would have done the same! Compared to the Hand, the Shadows who straddled the galaxy on legs of fire during the Shadow War were nothing more than insects.
If they're so powerful, why are they interested in you? It must be small change as far as they're concerned.
The Hand rewards loyalty. It is their only virtue. And they do not know what I know of their plans, so they cannot allow my return to Minbar.
or I could be questioned further.
I don't think he should have told David that.
Yeah.
Everyone loves telling everybody something in this pilot. Like, they never leave any mystery or anything.
Yeah.
So he was just following the script. He was just following what everyone else was doing.
But to say, oh, I think they'll want me because they might know what I know. And they don't want you to have me because you will only you will only interrogate me even more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's the bad guy. He could have lied. He's like, oh, they're called the Elbow.
Yeah.
They're nothing compared. Oh, terrible.
Yeah. On the bridge, the jump gate is in sight, but the enemy are waiting for them. The ship makes contact. They want Kafta and they will let him go, but they will destroy the Leandra if they have to, in order to prevent him from being questioned. David steps outside to think it over. He ends up in sickbay to visit Dulan. He seems to know their predicament, as he has already been told by the voices. Dulan points out that there is only one ship, and David says he has nothing new to use. And Dulan says, then use that. David contacts the enemy ship.
Open up a channel to the enemy ship.
Yes, sir.
We've made our decision. We will agree to turn the prisoner over to you in exchange for safe passage through the gate for myself and my crew.
What? David, don't do this.
There's no other way. There's nothing else we can do.
Where is the prisoner now?
I've asked one of my crewmen to escort him to the escape pod. He should be launching any time now.
We know what you did to our sister ship. We will scan the pod to ensure that Minister Kafta is aboard and that there are no remote control devices on board. And we will make contact with him once he is clear of your vessel. If any one of these precautions indicate trickery...
Understood.
The escape pod is launched. David says to keep the pod between them and the ship, as they won't shoot them. An image of Kafta appears and tells the other ship that he is safe and they have nothing to fear from the Leandra, as they have no stomach for death.
Now let me aboard, as I grow weary of their presence.
Great voice. A bit too much like Vivian from The Young Ones, but okay. The alien captain says that they have kept their promise, and David says they would not have fallen for the same trick twice, so what would be the point in deception? As the alien captain goes to meet Kafta, as the pod is brought aboard his ship, the door opens, and there is Kafta with tape over his mouth with the word BOOM written on it, as a detonation device hangs from the roof of the pod. Just then, the pin is pulled out, and no boom tomorrow, boom today! There's always a boom today in this show. The enemy ship explodes, but Malcolm wants an explanation.
Okay, I'm parking the ship right here, and we're not leaving until somebody tells me what the hell just happened here. Back on Earth, there were these two train robbers in the North American West, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. They came up with a great idea. Rob a train, wait 2 days, then rob the same train all over again in exactly the same way. Because nobody ever figured they'd pull the same gag twice in a row.
Ah, the old Butch Cassidy and Sundance routine.
Since we had nothing left to pull out, I figured we'd try the same thing twice. But since they were going to scan the pod, I knew we couldn't put any large remote-controlled detonators inside. So, I borrowed about 50 grenades from the armory.
Kafta?
He was responsible for the death of over 1,000 people on board the Valen and Beta Durani 7.
But wait a minute. Isn't Kafta dead?
He wanted to join his associates. He did. So that's why you wanted me to keep the ship on a straight line with the pod. So they think the transmission was coming from inside the pod. They know what we did last time. And they knew that we knew that they knew. So they made the perfectly logical assumption that we wouldn't dare try it again.
And you didn't tell us this
because I wanted your reactions to be sincere. They were.
Ah, it's Malcolm. It's Malcolm's old holosuit, and it makes a return appearance. They set a course for Minbar and return home. In the Grey Council, his actions are commended, even though David has reservations about his performance. He tells the council that Tanir acted honourably under the circumstances, and Jakar makes an appearance and tells him that what he did, he had to do under the circumstances. Later, David is back on the balcony overlooking the Leandra's refit. Sarah turns up and says she has just come from the hospital and Dulan is looking better. David says that Turk is also recovering, but it will take a little longer. It looks like the Leandra now has a permanent captain and crew. The first mission is to take Shikar back to a security conference on Babylon 5.
I greatly appreciate the ride, Captain.
No, it's my pleasure, Shikar. You know, rumor has it you spent the last few years just wandering the galaxy.
Yes, with a friend. She's gone now. It was, well, there are no words, really. There are things out there beyond imagination.
And he has a rather healthy imagination.
Well, you'll have to tell me about it sometime.
No reason for it. The path I took is not the path you will take. And where you walk, you will see things even more astonishing. And you will do so in fine company.
Nearing Epsilon Jump Gate. Prepare to jump. I hope the security conference goes well. You'll have to let us know if you come up with anything.
I will.
Standing by. Jump.
Andreas Katsoulas hands the Babylon 5 baton over to the new cast of the forthcoming show.
I should get my bags. Are you coming aboard?
No. No, we have to get back. You know, actually, I've never seen it before. Maybe next time we'll stop over for a few days.
You should. It's quite a place. A place of good times and bad. Of pain and growth. But in the end, a place of great hope.
He leaves it, never to be seen again in the franchise, but with a familiar warning.
But if you ever do come aboard, remember one thing. No one there is exactly what he seems. But then, who is?
And I, for one, can't wait to review the next 5 seasons of this show. But before we get to that, let's play a promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
It's a new era for Doctor Who.
Life depends on change and renewal.
And the crew from Earth Station Who podcast will continue to guide you through the past, present, and future of the franchise.
Though not necessarily in that order.
Join us for some wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey talk of stories new and old.
Listen to Earth Station Who wherever you access your podcasts. We're a proud member of the ESO Network.
We're all stories in the end.
Okay, and on to the trivia. Shikar tells David that no one on Babylon 5 is exactly what he seems. He previously told Catherine Sakai the same thing in Mind War 1994. This is Andreas Katsoulas' final appearance as Shikar in the Babylon 5 franchise. Tania Todd Sandomirsky previously appeared in Season 5, Episode 5, Learning Curve, in which he was played by Brendan Ford. I think I remember mentioning that in the actual review that we did. This was originally meant to be a pilot movie for Babylon 5 television series about the Rangers called Babylon 5, The Legend of the Rangers. When David is thrown against the bulkhead during the fight with Minister Kafta, the metal wall wrinkles on impact, revealing it to be a cushioned barrier. I didn't spot that. I should have. David states that Turk is the first Drazi to join the Rangers. However, Drazi recruits were previously mentioned in Learning Curve 1998 and Meditations on the Abyss, also in 1998. So, Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
No. The only Star Trek connection we have is Andreas Katsoulas, who we've talked about at length in our main series. But, of course, we all know he appeared in 1 episode of Enterprise and 4 of Next Generation.
Okay, so onto our ratings. We rate all these episodes we watch out of 5 jump gates and compare them to IMDb. And IMDb give this a rather worryingly low 6, which is a 3 on our scale. So, Sean, what did you think of this episode?
Well, Paul, I've been thinking about this for days since I watched this thing, and I wouldn't quite give it a 3. I was thinking maybe a 3.5. It's definitely got a lot of potential. It's not very good, But you could see that it was going to go somewhere. Also, Babylon 5, the pilot episode, was not very good either. You think JMS would have learned something over the intervening 6 or 7 years. Guess not. But there's definitely the bones, the making of a good show here. We've got the crew. We've got the underdog ship. We've got the Hand as the main bad guys for the series. We get to see the station Babylon 5 at the very end, so we know we're connected to that universe. So there was definitely potential here. It was okay. Hopefully they would get rid of that spinning in space, firing from your legs kind of scene. But you know, it's a pilot episode. You throw everything at the wall to see what sticks, and you go from there. But yeah, 3.5, because it was okay. It felt like a show. It was better than the last thing we watched. You could tell the production was up to the task. It just, you know, the writing lacked a little bit of something.
Yeah, I agree with you totally on that. Dan?
Yeah, it was like a roller coaster. Not the episode, my feelings on it. It was all over the place. I just, for the first 20 minutes, I absolutely hated it. I could not abide it. The characters were all just explaining how amazing they were to each other and just explaining all of their backstory in one big dump, rather than just giving us something to see where we could learn that about them. You know, have a little reference to King Arthur from the captain, so we get always into myths and everything like that. Not, when I first heard about the myths and the legends, I grew up learning about dragons and King Arthur, and it literally told her his entire backstory for 5 minutes straight. So annoying, so annoying. The entire episode, the movie itself, could be 45 minutes if they'd just shaved it down and done smart things to introduce the characters. We could have gone straight into the trial, straight from the credits, so that we're straight into the action and like he's facing his consequences. There were so many characters saying, oh, you're going to pay for this. Oh, there's going to be consequences. We'll just get to the consequences then. There were so many characters who needed to have more fleshed out, but it was given over to Captain Pretty McPrettyman, and he was just annoying.
He was ruggedly handsome with a cavalier attitude. Come on.
Yeah, he could just turn the volume off whenever it was his scenes, and that's fine. That's okay. That's all right. He's beautiful to look at. He's just dull. Every other character had a better potential to be something other than Mr. Creepy McHollow Suit. And these are the original names for the characters, of course. This is now 3 TV movies I've seen. Third Space, River of Souls, and Legends of the Rangers. It's really awful. Like, Babylon 5 should never do TV movies. They never work out. They are never good. And I can't bring myself to watch another one. I know we've got Call to Arms. I've never seen that one, so hopefully it'll do better. I think it's slap bang in the middle, 2.5. It's not good, it's not bad, it's somewhere, it's just out there, and it will never be seen again because it never got picked up. It should just be left. But Turk is life is the only thing I'm taking away.
He lifts heavy things.
He's just amazing. he does lift heavy things. He was amazing. I did like when he was shoving the ambassador. Like, he tapped him as like an appreciation, then just had tapped him a bit more. Yeah, so good. And Andreas Katsoulis is the only reason I think it gets a 2.5.
I think you're right. I think Andreas Katsoulis lifts this episode. Also grounds it into Babylon 5. Every scene he is in either has meaning, a parable, or a G-up, a pat on the back. Come on, you need to do this. You can be good. Or he's being absolutely hilariously funny in the council chamber. And you can see he's so enjoying that scene. He is just enjoying himself so much. That whole long speech that he gives, to say about the ship's going to be, they'll find us and all this type of thing. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. He probably had a day's work and went home and thought, right, that's that. Done that now. he's had another day to take all the stuff, the makeup off. Yes, Creepy McCreepy, the infiltrator who is so wimpy. it's just against, the first Narn that he bumps into. The other Narn, the female Narn, Nafil, she was like the the first, sorry, it was the, no, the second Nartoth. She just didn't have any strength to her.
No personality either. Really.
No, no, there was nothing there. The other characters were okay. They had to keep finding different ways to say that this person is a human being so that they could explain that it is more a more diverse crew. It just doesn't look diverse. At the end of the day, I didn't dislike this episode. Film even. As a pilot to a series, all pilots are a bit ropey. Even the first one that we had for Babylon 5 was a bit ropey because some of the characters didn't make it through to the next, to the series. And this may have been the same thing that happened with this one. This might have had the good grounding for a nice little series set in the same universe, where it can use modern day graphics and CGI and what have you. Once it got a budget for a series, they could have done that. You can see it was a little hamstrung by the fact that the bridge was actually just a very big room with a small table at the front where everybody sat round and controlled the ship instead of having them all spread out Star Trek style, where they're all sat around the perimeter of a bridge with multiple screens and things. And this was all done with one little keyboard, you know, that everybody was playing with. I think Sean had it right. There was potential for a good series here, a lot of potential because it had a long way to go before it was going to gain any sort of
traction.
Traction and good, you know, any sort of meaningful series to episodes to work with. So. So for that reason, I'm going to give this a 3.5, which is a little below. Sorry, no, a 3.63. Sean gave it a 3.5. So a little bit higher because I keep going back to it and thinking that wasn't bad. I like the plot. The plot was really good. I like the idea of using the same trick twice. That was unique. You don't normally get that sort of thing. I like the fact that they threw a radio control bomb in there and they blew up one ship and that was great. And then the next thing, it's all hand grenades. So yeah, I like the ideas that they were using in ingenuity, hiding in a comet's tail to get battered by rocks to then jump out and then for no reason whatsoever other than just to pad out the episode was ridiculous. I think this could have been good. I think they should have given it a go. And as we know, all first seasons are pretty ropey anyway. Things move on from there, so why not? But
I feel like it probably would have got picked up now. One, because I think it would have been better. It would have had better writing, but it would have been picked up for like a 6-episode run. Give it a chance, see what happens, and then just go. And then we could just have it as a limited series.
There you go.
But now, back then, it would have been a 24-episode, 23-episode arc. Would they really want to invest in that when they've already explained what every character's motivation is? There's no mystery. You know, the ghosts was kind of resolved as well. So we're not going to see the ghosts again because they already had their moment. You know, that would have been fun to keep that going. Yeah. That was genuinely creepy, seeing the guy's mouth distort. If he hadn't have spoken, I think that would have been a much more creepy way of doing it. And it could have just been said, he's a telepath. He's just worked out what the ghosts are trying to say, not they actually told him what to say. There was lots to do, but again, I don't know. It back then, I don't think they did enough. If it was now post Marvel, because seeing her punch the shots out and things like that, that is just, you know, Scarlet Witch throwing her hands up and doing magic everywhere. If they had the technology now, if in that pilot, it might have worked, but it just looked awful in this episode.
I agree with you there. I quite liked it a lot, but then. Took a long time to get there. The action sequences were good. The explosions were good. All the CGI was okay. They weren't obviously using Commodore Amigas anymore for these things.
The jump gates seemed like they got a proper upgrade. Like the wormhole effect looked a lot better this time around.
Yeah. But yeah, like you say, if this was now, certainly. Mm. With the way that Marvel has gone and the way that Star Wars has gone and with all the spin-offs they've got there, this absolutely would have been a series. It may not have lasted long. It may well have gone on to last a bit longer because you could, if you're going to start using stories like this with a little bit of intrigue, that's what I was going to say, then that would make sense. What was the score with the with the voices, with the ghosts. I didn't get that. They just seemed to they were there. They were hounding
and it was given Duran, up.
And then it wasn't mentioned after a while. It just disappeared. Was that maybe going to be used in future episodes, that the voices were there to help them in some way? It's a bit weird.
I guess. Yeah.
They seem to have all these ideas and then it just never followed through. So I don't know. It was definitely suffered from being another episode that was padded out into a movie.
Definitely.
So I think that's it, really.
Yeah.
Okay. So join us again next week when we will be discussing Babylon 5 TV movie A Call to Arms.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.